So, as an inveterate English teacher, I've got a handout. Okay, so this talk is about Philip K. Dick and alchemy, and I'm going to focus on three characters from the history of alchemy. Well, one of them isn't really an alchemist, Giordano Bruno, but because of Francis Yates's famous book, he's considered to be a hermetic thinker, and I believe that it's from Francis Yates that Dick gets his idea of Bruno. Paracelsus, who I believe Dick got his interest in Paracelsus from Jung and the whole Jungian interpretation of alchemy. And then finally, Jakob Burma, whose theology was a big influence on Dick. And I'm glad that Dave raised the idea of the repairman. I think that there's an interesting connection there. But I'd like to start off with a quote from Jung about this idea of doing research into the history of esotericism. Jung believed that his discoveries about psychology were, in a big way, influenced or determined by his encounter with the alchemists and the Gnostics. And he believed that he had found in the Gnostics, at the same time that he had made his own discovery, he had made the discovery that the alchemists were doing something similar to what he was doing. And we'll see later when Dick talks about the alchemists, I think that he's taking for granted a view of the alchemists that can't be found anywhere else but in Jung and in the occult tradition that Jung is coming out of, the 19th century view of alchemy that we find in Atwood's book on the Hermetic philosophy, Ethan Allen Hitchcock and The Golden Dawn, etc. So Jung is a precedent. Let's look at number one, please. First, I had to find evidence for the historical prefiguration of my own inner experiences. That is to say, I had to ask myself, where have my particular premises already occurred in history? If I had not succeeded in finding such evidence, I would never have been able to substantiate my ideas. Therefore, my encounter with alchemy was decisive for me, as it provided me with the historical basis which I had hitherto lacked. I think if we look at this quote from Jung, we can understand the way that Dick approaches the alchemists. When he writes about the alchemists in the exegesis, in that huge 9,000-page document of his notes about his experiences, so many times he says, oh, I've got it, right? I've discovered the great secret of the universe, and it's the same secret that Paracelsus and Giordano Bruno and Jakob Burma were working on. And how come nobody else ever figured this out but me, right? And it's all part of this sort of grandiose view where he sort of seems to be having delusions of grandeur, or maybe he really did figure it all out, right? And he's interested in this tension where he can be skeptical, like Dave was saying, of this idea, oh, I've got it, right? I've got it. The secret to the universe is in Paracelsus. But at the same time, he has a sense of humor about it, and there's an interesting tension there between, you know, what does it mean, what if it's true, and what if it's not true. So I got started on this project looking at Philip K. Dick and alchemy, reading his novel Valis. And in the novel Valis, Dick has a very idiosyncratic take on what the alchemists were doing and what their secret was. And I was especially interested because here we find something that's definitely not in Jung. Dick believed that because of his interesting mystical experiences, he had discovered this entity made of information. And he thought that this entity was buried in the texts of, I believe, the Nag Hammadi Gospels, and had only recently been discovered, but that the Hermetic alchemists had theorized about it and that they knew what it was. They were only lacking the document itself. So the question I asked that started this research is, where the hell did Dick get this idea of alchemy? Like, where does this notion come from? And I think that we need to look at his sources, which luckily now that the exegesis has been published, we know a lot more about, and we can see the actual notes that he was taking. So let's look at what he said in Valis. It all had to do with time. Number two in my handout. It all had to do with time. Time can be overcome, Mircea Eliade wrote. That's what it's all about. The great mystery of Eleusis, the Orphix of the early Christians, of Serapis, of the Greco-Roman mystery religions, of Hermes Trismegistus, of the Renaissance Hermetic alchemists, the Rose Cross Brotherhood, of Apollonius of Tyana, of Simon Magus, of Asclepius, of Paracelsus, of Bruno, consists of the abolition of time. The techniques are there. Dante discusses them in the comedy. It has to do with the loss of amnesia. When forgetfulness is lost, true memory spreads out backward and forward into the past and into the future, and also, oddly, into alternate universes. It is orthogonal as well as linear. In other places, he says, it's reading Plotinus that helped me figure out how to think about time, how to think about my mystical experiences and the problems with time. And I'm glad that Eric Davis is here to talk about this idea of anamnesis. That saves me the trouble of trying to explain what in the world Dick thought was going on with anamnesis. He thought that Plato's concept of anamnesis explained how he had all of this information available when he had his mystical experiences. Okay, so in the appendix to Francis Yates, and I am not familiar with any published sources that discuss this connection, but I think that it's correct. Dick is referencing the theory of Francis Yates that we find in the Rosicrucian Enlightenment. Now, I asked Eric Davis, who emailed Pamela Jackson, the only living human being who has read Dick's entire 9,000-page file cabinet of exegesis like two or three times, and she confirmed that somewhere in the unpublished stuff, he mentions having been given Rosicrucian Enlightenment by a friend. So we know that he read it. We know that he read Robert Anton Wilson's Cosmic Trigger, in which he discusses Francis Yates's Giordano Bruno book. There's a famous anecdote where Wilson encounters Timothy Leary in jail. And Timothy Leary says, oh, the secret is sex magic. And I found that out from reading Giordano Bruno. Wilson asks Leary, did you read Francis Yates? And Leary says, oh, no, I figured that out myself from reading Bruno's own writings. So Dick would have read that anecdote, and he certainly would have heard of Francis Yates in there. I haven't been able to find much more information about it, but here, let's look at the text. So part three, the Tractatus Cryptica Scriptura. That's his name for the Valis Appendix, which is an excerpt from the exegesis, whittled down to the basic principles, the basic points of his new system of esotericism. The Hermetic alchemists knew of the secret race of three-eyed invaders. So the secret of the alchemists is ancient astronaut theory. But despite their efforts, could not contact them. Therefore, their efforts to support Frederick V, Elector Palatine, King of Bohemia, failed. The empire never ended. The empire never ended was a phrase that he coined in order to talk about his idea that the Roman Empire is still around, time ceased in the time of the early Christians, and we have had fake time until now. Long story that I don't want to go into. The Rose Cross Brotherhood write, ex Deo nascimur in Jesu mortimer per spiritum sanctum reviviscimus, which is to say, from God we are born, in Jesus we die, by the Holy Spirit we live again. This signifies that they had rediscovered the lost formula for immortality, which the empire had destroyed. The empire never ended. Okay, so this is the secret of the alchemists. It's a weird science fiction explanation that in some sense he had revealed to him in his mystical experiences, but in another sense is his creative effort to understand these experiences put into a fictional form. So in a way, there's sort of two volumes of the exegesis. There's the real one, which we have 900 pages of published. There's 9,000 pages in a vault somewhere. And then there's the fictional exegesis, which is what the character Philip K. Dick is writing in the book Valis. We have the distillation into this Tractatus. So The secret has to do with this strange entity called the homoplasmate, which is some kind of an entity made of information that crossbreeds with the human being. At other points, Dick says, well, maybe all we are is just information, right? Maybe it's not some alien that I'm encountering, but maybe I'm just realizing that my true nature is information. So let's look at point 25. As living information, the plasmate travels up the optic nerve of a human into the pineal body. It uses the human brain as a female host in which to replicate itself into its active form. This is an interspecies symbiosis. The Hermetic alchemists knew of it in theory from ancient texts, but could not duplicate it, since they could not locate the dormant, buried plasmate. Bruno suspected that the plasmate had been destroyed by the Empire. For hinting at this, he was burned. The Empire never ended. So here we have a science fictional explanation of the burning of Giordano Bruno. I have not been able to find in all my research in many years, in many a dusty scholarly tome about Giordano Bruno, the idea that he was burned for revealing this alien entity, right? So where does this come from? Did he just make this up? What is it about Giordano Bruno in particular that got his interest? I think that the Francis Yates and Carl Jung theories are important, but I can't explain it in terms of a simple one-to-one influence. So I think that we need to find more information. We need to figure out what he was reading. We need to understand what this idiosyncratic interpretation of Bruno was for Dick. David was talking about the problem of the schizophrenic, right, having this private universe of meaning, and that's one of the big problems with reading the exegesis, is it's so difficult to understand. Like reading Jakob Burma, you need the key, right? You need to know how he's using these terms. You need to know what these characters were for him, what they were reflecting, what he saw in them. All right, last one about the alchemists from the appendix to Valis. It must be realized that when all the homoplasmates were killed in 70 CE, that's the Empire Never Ended theory, real time ceased. More important, it must be realized that the plasmate has now returned and is creating new homoplasmates, by which it has destroyed the Empire and started up real time. We call the homoplasmate the Holy Spirit, which is why the R.C. Brotherhood wrote, Per spiritum sanctum reviviscimus. So it's a science fiction interpretation of the Invisible College, right? It's a science fiction version of the Rosicrucians. They had this interesting secret. Okay, so I looked for information, but it's very difficult to find. Luckily, the exegesis was published, and we are able to find more information about what he thought about these guys. What is alchemy to Dick? And there's a really interesting letter from those Claudia Bush letters. Who's Claudia Bush? Claudia Bush was a woman that Dick corresponded with in the mid-70s, who was writing a paper about him and about his novels. And she wrote to him saying, you know, hey, I'm writing about you and I'd like to ask you about your novels. And he ended up writing her a volume of letters, just this amazing resource for understanding his views. And it got to the point where he was just sort of telling her what was going on in his life, and he was going through these mystical experiences. So we find a lot of early evidence for the mystical experiences in the letters. That's why it's published in the exegesis. For example, there's a great letter, a hugely funny letter, where he writes, you know, Dear Claudia, I was smoking a joint, and I saw Jesus. And then I found myself in a point where I had access to all of my unconscious contents. It was like the anamnesis experience was happening. And I called my ex-wife up and I told her, ask me any question, right? Like he was just, you know, rambling at her about these, you know, bizarre mystical experiences, sometimes drug-fueled. I found a great use of alchemy, and I hope you'll suffer me reading a long quote because it's all in this quote. In those letters where it seems like he's taking for granted that there's just sort of this idea of alchemy out there that he's referring to. What happened to me in March, that's March of 1974, is exactly that in the twinkling of an eye rebirth or transformation, much like an abrupt chemical process, as the alchemists so realized.
He just says, as the alchemists so realize, like, you know who the alchemists are. It's extremely frustrating for somebody who's trying to figure out what he means by that. But it must, as I say, be touched of adventitiously, which is the role Christ plays or did play. His work being already done. He set it in motion. It can't be turned back. He died, but he died knowing he did it. And of course he shared. He was the first to share in the fruits of his own secret. So it's a Christian alchemy, okay? He did add, though, that most of us would laugh at this, finding it incredible and impossible and senseless, not to mention stupid. It never meant anything to me until March, and in March when it happened to me, I couldn't relate what had happened to anything I'd ever been taught about God or religion. We'll see that he's looking for a new way to think about God when he's looking at guys like the alchemists. I thought God was up there in the sky, however, he is not. He is a spark which can fuse the total mind in each of us into something entirely new which was not there before. A description of irreversible chemical processes. Burning off the dross and making stable, or as the Bible says, uncorruptible, the valuable contents. You can readily see the analogy between this and a chemical reaction in which the results are spectacular, as with ignited gunpowder. I'll stop there. So, here we find an alchemical interpretation of his own mystical experiences. It seems like he had an idea of alchemy before he had had these experiences, probably what he got from reading Jung. He was a heavy reader of Jung in the 60s, boasted that he had read the complete works of Jung, probably did other research. He might have had access to the work of von Franz. For more information about alchemy. I'm not sure what he read. I'd like to learn more, and I'm here to argue that we should be looking for the sources of his alchemy. So, there's more in the exegesis, but the bad news is that there's not much more. A lot of what he said in the exegesis is just in the form of a hasty note, a sort of rambling note that he wrote when he was in a hurry. And he's taking for granted a lot of the stuff that he's thinking. So we don't actually find enough in the exegesis to satisfy an inquiry. We're going to have to be very careful about this. So let's look at one of the things that he says in the exegesis that I think it's interesting, because here we find him in number 5 conflating Hermeticism, Gnosticism, and Neoplatonism. They're sort of all of a piece to him. Sometimes Neoplatonism is the key to authentic Christianity, and sometimes it's sort of the devil, and he's going back to a religion before Christianity. And here's where we find that. So let's look at number 5, going back to a Hermetic Gnostic Neoplatonism. I am tearing down time, space, causality, world. This would be subversive to capitalism, to the bourgeois mind, which is intimately connected with 18th century Anglo-Saxon rationalism. Newton, Locke, Bentham, etc. I'm systematically undermining the philosophers and philosophy on which capitalism is based, and going back to a Hermetic Gnostic Neoplatonism, and a vitalism replacing mechanism. I deal a lethal blow to Anglo-Saxon thought, to its vaunted pragmatism. I think it's interesting that he sees Hermeticism, Gnosticism, Neoplatonism as a triumph of vitalism over mechanism. And I think that this is an important point, an important theme in the scholarship surrounding Francis Yates and the so-called Yates thesis, right? Was this battle between vitalism and mechanism a huge influence on the development of science as we know it? All of these interesting theories that were developed in order to build technology to explore these vitalistic theories. I deal a lethal blow, he says. This is that self-important once again, too, right? He's not comfortable with exploring Christianity and discovering mysticism. He has to be destroying it, or he has to be confirming it in some kind of an ultimate way. Okay, so let's talk about Giordano Bruno for a little bit. In Francis Yates's book, Giordano Bruno and the Hermetic Tradition, she offers a vision of Bruno, not as the Richard Dawkins idea of Bruno, who was burned at the stake for defending science against faith, but rather a vision of Bruno who was a magician.
right? Bruno was betrayed by Mocenigo, who claimed that he was teaching him magic along with the art of memory. And Frances Yates, she has an interpretation of Bruno's art of memory, which is still controversial. I would say that it's not the winning theory of Bruno's art of memory right now. If you read Rita Sterlezze or Stephen Klukas, Paolo Rossi, all of these guys who are working on it, it doesn't seem like Frances Yates' idea of Bruno's magical memory is really going to win out in the end, but we'll see. The jury's still out. However, I think Dick is definitely influenced pretty heavily, and we'll see a quote where he talks about the sort of magical mirror memory of Bruno. Yates thought that Bruno was using the art of memory as a magical tool to sort of reflect the universe in his head. And this is an idea that I think was attractive to Dick. I think that he was exploring in his exegesis this idea that there is like some kind of a magical memory would explain how it is that, for example, he had a vision where he saw 8 hours of abstract art prints all just being fired at him lightning fast, like a YouTube compilation of videos or something. And he just couldn't understand, like, why is it that I'm processing so much information? So I think the idea of a magical memory would have really appealed to him, trying to understand why is it that it moves so fast, right? Why is there so much happening? So let's look at number 6 here. Clearly, Bruno is my main man, and could, of all people, explain 274, 374. These experiences of mine make sense, best or only, within his hermetic hylozoic cosmology. Here we have some confidence in our skeptical theologian, right? It's not the ultimate key that explains the exegesis, but it's certainly one of the places where Dick thought, okay, now I get it. All right, I see I'm running out of time, so let me move quickly. I'll skip that next one about Bruno. Let's move on to 8. Okay, I have no doubt that the sort of space I experienced in the Alto Carmel dream and the voice dreams is Paracelsus's inner firmament. Thomas brought it with him along with the huge open books. That's the idea of a lot of information coming in, right? That was the mind of Paracelsus, and it was infinitely older and wiser than mine. Skip down all the way to the bottom, and he's theorizing about, is there anybody in history who would explain it all? Well, surprise, it's not Giordano Bruno anymore. Were I to pick one thinker, it's Paracelsus. What is this inner firmament of Paracelsus? It's an idea that Jung had a lot of interest in, and I think that it is something that Dick was correlating with that Francis Yates idea of the magical memory of Bruno. Paracelsus, I wish I had time. Paracelsus was a key figure in the development of modern medicine and changed alchemy as we know it. Huge influence on the Rosicrucians and on Jakob Burma. And Paracelsus' idea of the inner firmament is something about, you know, seeing the cosmos reflected in the human being, this magical idea of correspondences, and this is something that Dick found really attractive. Inner space of Paracelsus is perhaps the key to how the immortal man can be transtemporal and transpersonal. He saw in the alchemical theories a key to thinking about his own inner space as being the place in which his mystical experiences were happening. It was a way to solve this problem of, you know, what happened to me? Why is it so intense? Why was there so much information? Why did it hit me so hard? So here's a quote from Jung on the back, number 9, on the inner firmament of Paracelsus. For Paracelsus, these scintillating sparks change into the spectacle of the interior firmament and its stars. He beholds the darksome psyche as a star-strewn night sky whose stars and planets and fixed constellations represent these archetypes in all their luminosity and numinosity. The starry vault of heaven is in truth the open book of cosmic projection in which are reflected the mythologems, i.e. the archetypes. In this vision, astrology and alchemy, the two classic functionaries of the psychology of the collective unconscious, join hands. And I've given you an interesting quote from Dan Merker on active imagination for Paracelsus. I'll skip that. So what about Jakob Burma? Jakob Burma, I don't think that Dick really looked at Burma the way an ASE scholar would, right? He wasn't really interested in Chileasm and apocalypse and all of these, you know, Protestant movements and this interesting cultural matrix in which Burma evolved. Dick really saw Burma as this alchemical theologian who was theorizing about the you know, the principles of the Godhead and the Ungrund, and here's Preiple. Let's look at number 14. There's a good summary in a footnote in Jeffrey Kripal's book, Mutants and Mystics, which explains the influence of Burma on Dick. Now, Burma's famous mystical experience story happened in the workshop. It's almost as if Burma was a Philip K. Dick character. And I think that this was an extremely attractive view to Dick, not only because Burma had philosophical ideas that he found interesting in terms of his own theology, but also that we had this wonderful craftsman who had a mystical vision. We had a repairman. It's almost like the scene in Galactic Pot Healer where the guy's trying to fix a pot and he gets contacted by this powerful alien being. Dick compared his awakening before the sunlit golden fish to the 17th century cobbler Jacob Burma, who experienced his own enlightenment staring into a pewter dish reflecting the sunlight. Their systems are certainly similar enough. Dick, for example, consistently employed Burma's language of the Urgrund, or primordial ground, his notion that evil is somehow integral to the divine process, and his notion that the universe comes about so that the maker can obtain thereby an objective standpoint to comprehend its own self. So Dick found this sort of thing useful. I've run out of time, so I'd just like to say in conclusion that I believe that looking at the sources of Dick's alchemy and the creative use to which he put them is interesting not only to Dick scholars, but to theorists of esotericism in general, because we see an example of the reception of alchemy in the late 20th century. The reception of alchemy by a science fiction author, the reception of alchemy by a druggy mystic. Dick is bringing a lot of lenses to bear on alchemy, and we can learn a lot about the way that we thought about alchemy back in the 1970s by looking at the way that Dick did and the uses that he put it to. Thank you very much.